It wasn't just Andrew Benintendi today. It was JD Martinez, who has gotten hot.
That ball is gone! What a bullet by Devers!
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Time once again for the PC and Jerry podcast. Tom Caron and Jerry Remy sitting respectively in our home safely. Thanks for joining us. Rem, how you doing this week?
Doing good. You know, it's nothing much changes. We just got to sit here and wait. And that's all we're doing is waiting for a little baseball, maybe.
You know, it is. I was thinking about this. We started this. I think we just did one in Florida, right? Did we do one or two in Florida?
I think one in Florida. Yeah.
So we've only done one of these in person together.
Right. And we've had no games to talk about.
Nothing. There's been no news whatsoever to go on. And obviously, we did this, with the coronavirus and the pandemic. And now in the past week, things have gotten a lot worse around our country. It's a sad time in our country right now, Jared.
Yeah, it really is. You know, obviously, the coronavirus, still we don't know what the end result of that's going to be. I mean, you know, I worry about all these people that are out now doing different things and, you know, whether there's going to be a spike in that and that's going to come back. That concerns me. Of course, what's happening on the streets right now, just horrible. You know, the episode that caused this was just awful, just absolutely terrible. And then, you know, what's going on, the peaceful riot, the peaceful demonstrations are great. And that's what people, you know, supposed to do. That's what makes a difference. The whole thing's just such a mess and such. So it's so depressing to watch, really, as far as I'm concerned. The whole thing from beginning to now.
You know, no laughing matter, but it makes me think when I was young and my mom always said, you know, nothing good happens at a bar after 1 a.m. You know,
right.
In Boston specifically, I thought the protests were beautiful on Sunday during the day into the evening. You saw the police and the law enforcement de-escalating any problems. They were in it together. And then late Sunday night, you got rocks going through the windows of stores and the looting going on. And what really upsets me about it, Jerry, is what it does is it deflects any attention from the message, which is important to what's happening, because then people lump it all together. They say this is just violence, when in fact the vast majority of it were peaceful, were making their voices heard, and were rallying against a horrific moment. And as we know, a long stretch throughout our history where Black lives have been overlooked and voices have been overlooked. And now it's getting lost in the noise of all of this, Jerry. That's what really upsets me.
It really is. And, you know, it's interesting you mention that, because Sunday I was watching the same thing, you know, and I told my wife, I said, you know, Boston's got to be fine. I said, they're going to handle this properly. I said, they're going to have peaceful marches. Everybody will. And it was. And, you know, it was like that until very late at night. And I was shocked. I went to bed fairly early that night. And I was shocked when I got up. My wife actually stayed up till about 1 o'clock in the morning because everything broke loose in Boston. And when she told me of that, I couldn't believe it, you know. But it just goes to show that, you know, there are bad apples everywhere, and they take advantage of these situations. And it just it ruins the moment for everybody, because it was a moment for everybody to try to come together over this horrible crime that went on. And people, I think, you know, really wanted to do that. They really wanted, you know, to make it known that there's a lot of injustice still going on in this country. And they wanted to make it known how they felt about it, but in a very peaceful way. So you're right. You're losing the message of what, you know, you're trying to do, what you're trying to get out. You lose it because of what's going on within these, you know, different cities all over the country. And it's very sad for me. It's very depressing. It reminds me, you know, back in the times of Watts and playing in situations like that. Just awful for the country. And you know, that on top of the coronavirus, I mean, my goodness, are we ever gonna live in a normal world again?
Yeah, 2020 is not ranking up there on the best years. You know, I've always thought that sports were somewhat immune to all of that, right? You excel in sport because you're great at the sport, right? In Major League Baseball, the best players on the planet excel. And we know the stories, and the Red Sox decades ago were very much guilty of making decisions based on race, and shame on them. And John Henry and the ownership group now has said it's a shameful past, that we are trying to be better now and trying to do better now. And I'm sure you've seen racism in baseball and sports, but by and large, I've always felt, Jerry, that sports were maybe a little better than most of society, because it's a meritocracy, right? You earn your spot based on your talent. Teammates, you've had teammates of multiple races, nationalities, and I assume you respected them all based on their character and their ability on the field, which is why I think it's important that athletes and teams have come out here in the last week and used their platforms to try to champion these causes, to help black voices be heard.
Absolutely, without question, and they should, you know, but come out and make sure you say the right things. You know, and you know, there have been some cases where the wrong thing has been said, which I don't appreciate very much. But the fact that if you say the right thing, yes, if you got a voice, go out and say it, you know, and try to help. But you know, I never expected all of this to be past us. You know, we went through some horrible times with this years and years ago, and here it is, right back smack in your face again. You know, and I guess we just have not learned our lesson. You know, we have not gotten much better at what we're supposed to be getting better at. And that's what bothers me. And growing up in the world of sports like I did, you're right, TC. You know, we have a mixture of all type of people that come into a clubhouse and bond and get together and go out and, you know, perform their job in the best way possible. And it's a totally different feeling. It's like you're in another world compared to what we're looking at now. And, you know, what we're looking at now is the real world. And unfortunately, you know, you think things have changed for the better. And in some cases, I think they have changed for the better. But it's not good enough. It's still not good enough yet. That thought, that vision for me of watching those four police officers doing what they were doing, and three of them standing there, or two of them, three of them on their knees, and one standing there watching, was absolutely disgusting in my mind. Just absolutely disgusting. And you know, I didn't know what it was going to lead to, but I'm saying, does this still exist? Does this kind of brutality still exist? And it does. And it's so sad to see.
You know, I think a lot of us have difficulty. It's uncomfortable, obviously. You and I are both white. We are both New Englanders through and through. And you know, we're reading a lot and hearing a lot. And I do think if there's any good out of this, it's that a lot of people, regardless of your color, are looking at this as an opportunity to stand up. And I've heard the word ally used a lot, be an ally. But we can't imagine it. We've never walked in their shoes.
No,
we can do right now is hope that all of this leads us to a better place.
Yeah, I totally agree with you 100%. You know, I mean, if anything good can come out of this, and, you know, which none of it has been good, really. If anything good can come out of this, then it's a positive. But it can't be for a week or 2 weeks or a year or 2 years. This has got to go away forever. And, you know, you wonder, is this ever going to go away? This has been going on since I was a kid. I'm 67 years old, for crying out loud. You know, when are we all going to wake up and you know, say that this is not proper. This is not the right way you treat people. This is not, they, you know, people don't deserve this. It's crazy. And it just, I want to say pisses me off, but it does. It pisses me off to no end. Because we all know people, we have friends, that we have colleagues, we have friends, we have, you know, terrific people, great people that we work with. And you know, you see this kind of thing going on around the country, it just absolutely makes me sick to my stomach.
No, I have no doubt about that. Our hearts, our thoughts, our prayers go out to everyone who's trying to do this the right way and get the message out there. And we tell everybody to be safe. Be safe out there, because, again, you hope it all leads us to a better place, makes us a better society, but there's still going to be some tough days ahead, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And, you know, you've got the combination of the two major things going on right now, and neither one of them are good. And it's a very, very difficult time in our country. And, you know, what's going to heal it? It's not going to be baseball. It's not going to be hockey. It's not going to be football. It's going to be people. People are going to have to heal this. And you know, it's better than it was. but it's not good enough, not even close to being good enough. So it's got to take people to step up.
And to have their voices heard. So we support all those people who are rising up and speaking their mind and doing it peacefully, and we hope that continues. In the middle of all of this, certainly not as important as any of this, is the ongoing negotiations between Major League Baseball and the Players Association. Players Association over the weekend did in fact come out with a counter proposal, more games, over 100 games, which means they would get paid for every game, which means they countered with more. And I think the owner's offer was something the players were never going to accept. The player's offer is something the owners are never going to accept,
right.
Except we do now have 2 points, which means by definition, Jerry, there is a middle ground in there somewhere. Can they find that middle ground?
There's somewhere about 70, 80, 90 games that can be played. Okay, that's where we are right now. And I'm done being an expert on this side and that side and what they're saying. And I started to read the column the other day about the proposal made by the players. And halfway through, I was totally lost. So I said, you know what? I'm giving up until baseball returns. And then I'm going to go back and do my job, which my job is to analyze baseball games. I'm not good at analyzing. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a labor lawyer. I don't understand a lot of these things. But I do know, as you said, the last proposal, players 114 games, 50 for the owners. Somewhere in the middle, there has to be some kind of a point where they say, okay, we can agree on this amount of games. And they've still got other issues they've got to work out. But, that's the big thing right now, I think, that's left. And it's going to be done this week, I think, TC, because if you're talking about starting a season at the end of June, I mean, these players need 3 to 4 weeks to get ready. And there does come a cutoff date for this, because then you wouldn't have enough time to have a season. So I think this is crunch time this week. I really do. And I think there's going to be a lot more talking going on than we saw last week, where it was just a couple of sessions and that was it.
Both sides have been beaten up pretty good in the press by fans because it's gotten ugly, right? They're talking money. Nobody wants to hear either side talk about money right now because everyone's got money issues. We know that. But the good thing maybe is that if they can get through this, as you said, in the next week, they could still be the first sport back.
Yes.
They'd be ahead of hockey. They'd be ahead of basketball. They'd be ahead of football. In
yes.
July, baseball could still take center stage. And after all the bad press that baseball has gotten, this could be some really good publicity for the sport, don't you think?
Oh, without question. And here's a newsflash. You know, the relationships between players and owners have really never been good. They've never been good. Anytime it comes down to a collective bargaining agreement, it's very rare that you don't have some kind of lockout or strike. So it's so important that, they come together through this episode right now, through what the country's going through what everybody's going through, and make some kind of deal where we can get baseball back. And it would be huge. I think, I'm getting it from a lot of people. They're tired of hearing about this other stuff. They just want to watch a baseball game. They don't care if there are fans in the stands. They don't care about that. They just want to watch some baseball. And look, all of us in the profession, all of us that do the jobs that we do, what do we want more than anything else? We want a baseball game to do. That's what we enjoy doing. We don't enjoy listening to this. I don't particularly enjoy it at all. I pick it up every day and look, and sometimes I read the story, sometimes I don't. I'm past the point where it's interesting to me now. I just want a baseball game. I want to go to my booth. I want to do what I do. I want to do my job. That's what I want to do right now. And, I think they're at a point where, they're at 50, they're at 114. As I said, there's going to be an 80 to 90 stretch where they can agree on and play some ball and at least have some sort of – it's going to be a weird one. It's going to be a strange one, but some sort of season.
Well, here's the other thing, too, is if baseball comes back, let's say they're playing in July, they are in a position right now where – for the first time in decades, maybe, baseball is the perfect sport for our time right now, right? We're always rushing. We're always going out. We're going to movies. We're going to dinners. We're going to concerts. Well, there's no movies. There's no concerts. There's no restaurant dinners, or at least not many, and not indoors. There's nothing new on television. We've watched everything else on television, and we're not in a rush. We have nothing but time. All of a sudden, a four-hour game, why not? I'm going to kick my feet up and enjoy 4 hours of baseball. Baseball could be perfect for this summer for where we are as a country.
You know, and the other thing too is, you know, one of the things I read this morning about the fact that they might mic up players and do things like that, that'd be great. I think that's something I've been hoping for a long time, because then you really get inside the game. You know, you get to what guys are saying and how they're communicating on the field. And I find that all very interesting. You know, I really do. And, you know, hopefully that's something that we can get to, you know, when we do get baseball back, if we get it back, you know, that they can make some differences in the game that will be more, you know, that people will have never seen before. And people can say, wow, that's great, you know, and keep your eyes, turned into a game where sometimes they may click out, you know, it becomes a boring game. There are a lot of lousy games. Let's face it. I mean, there are a lot of bad games. But, you know, you got certain things that you can do as a sport to enhance that, the viewing, you know, pleasure of watching a baseball game. And I think that would be a great step. That would be one thing. If they can agree to that I would really, really enjoy it.
Yeah, and apparently that player's proposal has some language in there about that. At least they're going to explore that. Here's one that really hit me. Did you watch any of the Brady golf thing?
I did not, no.
Okay. I watched it, and you know what? There was way longer stretches between golf shots than there are between pitches.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody was bored because they were all wearing mics. We were listening to what they were saying. We were getting taken in. A lot of it was bantering and messing around, fine. But a lot of it was also, you know, Phil Mickelson explaining a putt for like 3 minutes. I mean, thank God he's not a like science professor, because I'd never be able to follow him. But where the shade is and the bend of the grass. But that's, I want to hear that. And I know there'll be limits on how much you can hear. But, you know, even in the dugout, I want to hear Ron Renicki telling somebody, hey, if this guy gets on, you're going to go in. Here's what we're looking for. That's the inside stuff that could make baseball go from boring to really compelling very quickly.
Without question, you know, you don't realize the stuff that goes on, you know, not only in the dugouts, but on the field. You know, we look out in the field and we don't hear anything. We just see the guys, you know. But there's a lot of communication going on out there about positioning, about, you know, this, that, what's the count, you know, that's 2 outs, this, and this. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff, conversations at first base, for example, you know. I mean, there's a lot of good things that go on. Now, you've got to be careful what you put on, obviously. That's going to have to, it's going to take, you know, a smart, you know, smart people to run that to make sure you get the right stuff on. But if you get the right stuff on, I find it very interesting. And, you know, I know what goes on in a baseball game. I don't know what goes on in a football game. I don't know what goes on in a basketball game and a hockey, you know, Matt. I don't know. And I'd love to hear that stuff.
Right.
I would, as an athlete, I would love to hear that stuff. Just like watching the Michael Jordan documentary. I loved it. I absolutely loved it because I saw it behind the scenes. I heard stuff that, you know, I didn't know that was going on. And how, you know, things like bench meetings, you know, like call timeout. What we're going to come out with, how we're going to do this. I love that stuff. And that's as an athlete, you know. I think people would enjoy that with baseball. I really do.
Sure. I mean, think about, take me inside the dugout. Take me inside the bullpen, right? What's going on? Who's getting up? Why? What are they telling them? You know, when are you going to come in? That's the strategy. You know, it's what has made you such a great analyst over the years, Jerry, is you're first guessing instead of second guessing, right? You're taking us into what might happen.
Yeah.
You do it as well as anybody in the game. You know, here's what they're thinking. Here's when there's going to be a hit and run. Here's when they might consider a bunt. Don't tell me after the fact. Tell me before the fact. And that's what you learn if you go into the dugout. Like you said, maybe it'll be on tape delay. Maybe it'll be a pitch later. But it's still great stuff.
And the same thing goes on in the dugout, you know, that things I say, because they're thinking about that stuff all the time, you know. Well, and if this situation pops up, what can we do? Can we do it? When should we do it? What count should we do it on? You know, is he using a slide step? Is he doing this? You know, as an analyst, you throw it out there because that's what you remember when you play. And then, you know, as a player, you kind of just react to what sign you're going to get, and you just do it with not really thinking about why this is happening. But as you grow older and more mature in the game, you know, you start to understand the reasons why they do it. So for me as an analyst, you throw it out there. It may not happen, but, you know, every once in a while it does. It makes you look good. But the fact is, this is what they're talking about. These are about all the possibilities and, you know, that can come up at this particular pitch. And those are things I think fans would love to hear. And I, you know, I mean, to me, as an athlete, I just would love to hear that in other sports because it would make me so much more interested in it, you know. Not that I'm not already.
Yeah, you know? You might get to hear it in all of them now, right? Because I think they'll all follow suit. You got no fans.
You got to become fan-friendly.
Fan-friendly. See, just like the Remdog's been fan-friendly all these years. When we take a look at how that might come out, and that's the other thing, by the way, I mentioned empty seats. Bring the cameras down. Give us a different look, right? We've never seen, give me the look of four rows up behind the dugout out onto the pitcher, right? Right, you know, now you can put the cameras wherever you want. I think that could be fun.
Oh, I agree. It's going to be a totally different look, you know. And, you know, like the best case scenario is to have the fans in the stands. That's the best case scenario. But that's not going to happen. We know that. So they're going to become creative on what they do, I'm sure. They're going to try to make this game as appealing as they possibly can to the public. And hopefully, you know, they do the things the right way. Hopefully, first they get a damn deal done. And then, they do these things that they're talking about that will create tremendous fan interest. They'll see a game that they've never seen before. It'll be almost like going from black and white TV to color TV. You know, I remember those days, you know, when I first saw Fenway Park in color, my eyes lit up. I was like, whoa, you know. Well, if you can get this part of the game into it too, I think it makes it much more interesting to the fan that's just sitting there for 3.5 hours listening to us babble. You know, they can hear what the babble that's actually going on the field. I think that would be terrific.
Yeah, and hopefully that's something that would carry on once it's been established. Be a good thing. In the meantime, we keep showing old games. There's no lack of old games. We've been showing the 2007 championship team last week and this week. The most overlooked championship in Boston sports modern history. We had Rusty Sullivan, executive director of the New England Sports Museum, the Sports Museum. He was on the show a couple weeks ago, and we had him rank 1 through 12. And by the way, what a beautiful thing that you can rank 12 championships over the last 20 years. But he put the 2007 Red Sox number 12. They get last place. It's easy to forget about the 07 team because there was no drama. They just were good. They were young. And they didn't go wire to wire, but they were pretty much running away with things by Memorial Day.
My memory is the same. I mean, I skip over them. You know, it's sad. I really do. I go from 2004 to the next one, you know. And I wait a minute. There was one between this. You know, and I have a hard time remembering a lot about it. You know, I really do. You were talking before we came on about J.D. Drew's home run, you know, and then it kind of clicks in a little bit, you know. But, it must be weird to have been a member of that club. And you know, when the Red Sox championships are talked about, you're kind of like down at the bottom of the list. But you did the same thing that the other teams did.
Right. Well, and also, you know, Larry Lucchino was on yesterday. I did a segment with him, and he said, you know, they used to joke after 04, his line was, any group of schlemiels could win one, you know. And you know, you can get lightning in a bottle, right? I mean, that's one is great, but one can be a fluke. Doing it again 3 years later with younger players, by the way. 04, much more of a free agent group. 07, you started, you know, Ellsbury and Euculus and Lester and Papelbon. You had the young talent coming up now, drafted and developed by the Red Sox. You know, doing it again that quickly went from, oh my God, it's not a curse anymore, to, wow, this is one of the top franchises in the game.
Yeah, and that's where our kids got spoiled, right? You know, this happens all the time. It happens every couple of years now. And, one thing I wanted to ask you, you talked to Larry Lucchino. How is he feeling, by the way?
He's good. Okay? He's doing well. Yeah, he's looking great. Good.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's good news. Because I know for a while he was in pretty tough shape. And, you know, I know that I spoke to him a couple of times, and I'm glad that he's doing well. So, that's great news. Great guy.
No, no doubt. No, you know, now it's interesting in Pawtucket. They don't know if they'll play in Pawtucket again because they're supposed to move to Worcester. Right. Probably won't be any minor league baseball, but they'll figure that out. One thing, you mentioned J.D. Drew had the grand slam, which is that one swing kind of made him an entirely different guy in the minds of Red Sox fans. He hadn't driven in a run that playoffs. We know, fans still want to Trot Nixon. They miss Trot Nixon in right field. But that grand slam, he was a different cat, though, wasn't he? It was hard to find the pulse sometimes. Great swing, great hitter.
Yeah,
but he wasn't a guy who was going to go charging up the hill for you at the end.
No, beautiful player. You know, I mean, everything was smooth. Everything was relaxed. He was relaxed. He was smooth. I don't know what was going on inside of his head. But when you looked at him, he went, wake up. You know, just give me a little bit. Give me a little bit of something, you know. But he was a very, very talented player. But you make a great point coming off of Tri Nixon, who, you know, was filthy dirty after a half inning. And then you got JD just kind of gliding through the ball game, you know, just gliding through life. And but his talent was really off the charts. He was a great player. You know what he reminded me a little bit of is Fred Lynn.
Yeah.
You know, he really did, because Fred was like that too. You know, he was kind of laid back, and he just let his talents explode on the baseball field, you know. And that's what JD reminded me a little bit of, Freddie Lynn, yeah.
It's, you know, I always say we judge the guys by the money, right? If J.D. Drew was making half of what he made, no one would ever complain. But he came in as a big money superstar, so you expected everything.
Yeah. Well, it's like that in any sport. And any, you know, any guy, it's like you, T.C. You get the big money, you know, and everybody, everybody expects his performance from you every single day.
Every single day. Yeah.
I feel for your internal pressure. I really do.
I'm a kindred spirit with J.D. Drew. That's it. Daisuke Matsuzaka is the other guy that, you know, it's much like 07. Like 07, they were the world champs, and we forget about them. Daisuke had a great 2007 season. But,
after he loaded the bases every time with walks, he had a great year.
Yeah.
Drive me crazy.
Just to stay in shape, as Eck would say. He'd get you. He'd be 0-2. Then he'd throw three balls. Then he'd get you.
Yeah.
I forget the number. You guys had it going all year that year where hitters were like 0 for 20-something with the bases loaded.
Yeah.
Just told you how often he loaded the bases.
You know, it reminded me of – you remember Mike Torres? She pitched out of my club in 78.
Yeah.
And he would come in to a game – and you might as well have just put the leadoff batter on first base, because he was walking the leadoff batter. So save four pitches and put him on first base, and then he started to pitch. Well, Daisuke, it was like put him on first, put him on second, put him on third, and then I'll start to pitch, you know. But I never forget, you know, with Daisuke, the big, like hoopla, him coming into
– oh, my goodness. That spring training was incredible.
It was amazing, you know. Oh. And it's the first time, I believe, that we had the Japanese media following us, you know, like, you know, every single day. And I thought about that, and I said, you know, the pressure this guy must be under. And he didn't speak to them a lot. He really didn't speak to them a lot. You know, he kind of went about his job. I don't know how much they got out of Daisuke, when, you know, but I'll tell you what, every move he made, they were all over. It was unbelievable.
He would do a separate post-game press conference for them every day. And my favorite moment was, I forget what year, might have been 08. 08, he had the great year, 18 wins, a 2-point-something ERA, but still frustrating to watch. But he, I remember him doing a post-game press conference with them on days he didn't pitch.
Yeah.
Like, they wanted to know, like, I had a session today, and I felt good, and I'm ready to go in 2 days.
Yeah. Today was my running day, and I felt good today, too. You know, but, you know, Ichiro went through the same thing out there in Seattle,
right,
you know.
Right.
Funny story about Ichiro is I was down near the batting cage in Seattle one day, and he had an interpreter, obviously, you know, that everywhere he'd go. And I'm down at the batting cage, and I didn't expect Ichiro to speak English at all. He was speaking better English than I was, you know, to his teammates.
Yeah.
And I had the best laugh about it. I said, because, you know, he's got all the Japanese media around him. He's got the interpreter. He was another guy that didn't like to really talk to him a lot.
Right.
You know, and he kind of went about his business. And what a player he was. Wow.
Ken Maka, who was with me in studio for a couple of years, right, a major league manager, he told me a story once that he was managing the first All-Star game that Ichiro was in. And you know, didn't know Ichiro could speak English, or at least not much. It was early in his career. And at the end, Ken gives a little speech to the team. Here we go. Here's what I expect. I still want to win, you know, one of these all-star. You're going to be in there.
Yeah.
You might as well win. You know, and all of a sudden, they're all getting up, and Ichiro gets up first and looks at them all and goes, let's bleeping go. He didn't say bleeping, but I was there. And the guys all went nuts because nobody knew he spoke English. So there you go. But great personality if you ever get to talk to him. And then lastly, we're almost out of time, but you know, Dustin Pedroia bursts onto the scene as Rookie of the Year, would be MVP a year later. The big home run, and that was the famous, he didn't have his credential. They wouldn't let him in the ballpark in Colorado. And he said, go get Jeff Francis, and he'll tell you who I am.
Yeah. Here comes the bad boy.
Yeah. But his, man, there are very few guys who came into the game and never let it wear. He hit like 161 in April, and he didn't care. He was going to keep swinging. I remember people telling me, this guy's going to have to change his swing, too big a swing, yada, yada. He was not going to change a thing because he knew he was going to succeed.
I was the worst. I was the one guy, I looked at him for a month, and I said, this kid's not ready for the big leagues yet. And I think he was very close to going back down to the minor leagues. Very, very close. And Alex Cora was probably going to take over that spot at second base. And all of a sudden, he got hot. And I remember him saying, when I get hot, I really get hot. And we're going, oh, okay, you know, well, let's see. Well, we saw, you know, and he got hot, hotter than a pistol. And he never stopped the rest of his career. So I was dead wrong about him. Not that he couldn't play in the big leagues. Just that I thought, you know, he's right now, he's overmatched. And it may be a good thing for him to go back and get himself straight at AAA before he comes back to the big leagues. He's the one guy in my that I look back that I feel bad the way I felt about him, you know, because I just didn't think he was ready. And then, man, did he take off and, you know, he became the best second baseman in Red Sox history. You know, you can argue him, Bobby Doerr. Bobby Doerr's in the Hall of Fame. Dustin Pedroia, had him continue to play, probably would have had a really good chance of being in the Hall of Fame too. So, I mean, I would take – if I had a number one pick, I would take him. Well, I had a number one pick in the fantasy draft. I didn't take him. But the fact is that, you know, he's a guy you want in your club. He's just a guy that comes to beat you every single day. Not just beat you, but he wants to embarrass you.
Yeah, he's a winner, a gamer, right? A guy who just wanted to win every day. Well, there you go. Another quick half hour. They fly by. We didn't even get to half of what I wanted. Great to see you. One of these days, we'll know something about an opening day schedule. And we'll talk about it. Maybe next week, Jerry. Great to see you, buddy.
I'm pulling for next week.
Let's go. So this week, by the way, let's wrap it up with the optimism meter, the Rendog optimism. Is it good or bad this week?
I still feel good. I still feel good about things.
There you go. Thumbs up from Jerry Remy. Baseball coming back, hopefully sooner rather than later. That does it for another edition of the TC and Jerry podcast. We'll see you again next time.